Vayikra El Moshe, Vayidaber Adonai Elav, Me'ohel Mo'ed Lemor. And he called to Moshe, and Hashem spoke to him from the tent of meeting, saying, dot, dot, dot. Zachar Eis, Asher Asalecha Amalek, Baderech b'tzeisechem mimitzrayim. Remember what Amalek did to you on your way out of Egypt. OU Israel presents
in. Welcome.
Shalom and welcome to another issue of Torah Tidbits Audio. I'm your host, Phil Chernofsky, and this show is for Parshat Vayikra and for Parshat Zachor, and in a way a pre-Purim show, since recording next week on Purim is questioned at this moment. I can't say for sure whether it will take place or not. So we have things to discuss. Recording and first availability. Yom Chamishi, Thursday, the seventh day of Adar Hasheni, 5779, corresponding this year to March 14th. Now, the seventh of Adar is the traditional date of Moshe Rabbeinu's birth and death, his birthday and his yahrzeit. And as such, it became also a day for the Chevra Kadisha in all Jewish areas to have an annual program of prayer and learning and all kind of other stuff, since it was God who took care of Moshe Rabbeinu's burial, and we look to God as the first involved in the chesed shalemet of Jewish burial, and anyone who follows in God's footsteps in that is considered very praiseworthy, and it became associated with the seventh of Adar. Whether Moshe Rabbeinu was born in a one or two Adar year is not known. and whether he would, in retrospect, celebrate the 14th of the 13th of Adar in the first Adar or in the second Adar. I don't know. It's just a matter of speculation. So we're going to leave it now because there is a school of thought that says that he was born in the first Adar of two, and that would give him no connection at all to the other counting of seven Adar in the first month, the first of the two Adars. Okay. I do want to spend a little time talking about March 14th. The hoopla is made over the fact that it is International Pi Day, pi being often noted as 3.14 before you get to the 15926 and keep going. And 3.14 in the American way of counting the calendar would be March 14th. Those who are regulars to Torah Tidbits know I have an aversion to using numbers for the secular months. If the Torah says about January, if the Torah says about Nisan, HaChodesh HaZelachem Rosh Chodashim, this month is the first of your months, then we shouldn't go and turn around and fill out a form or a check or whatever with the date that says that January is the first of the month. It's not. Nisan is. Anyway, we're taking the three from March, point 14, and mentioning it as Pi Day. It is a number that people are capable of handling and understanding certain things. And we'll get back to Pi in a moment. I realize now that I have forgotten Tehillim. For those who say Tachanun on Zion Adar, we will use Psalm 130. Shir hama'alot mima'amakim kraticha Adonai. Adonai shima v'koli tihyena aznecha kashivot l'kol tachanunai. Im avonot tishmor yah Adonai miya amod. Ki imecha haslicha ma'an divare. Ki viti Adonai kivita navshi v'lidvaro hochalti. Nafshi l'Adonai mi shomerim l'boker, shomerim l'boker. Yachel Yisrael el Adonai ki im Adonai ha-chesed v'harbe imo fedut. V'hu yifda et Yisrael mikol avonotav. Achenu kol beit Yisrael hanatunim batzara v'ashivya ha-omedim bein bayam uvein bayabasha ha-makom yirachem aleihem v'yotzieim mitzara l'irvacha u'me'afela l'ora u'mishibud l'geula. Hashta ba'gala uvizman kariv v'nomar amen. Okay, folks, here's where my apology begins. I'm cutting this extremely short. I'm having technical trouble, and, well, I don't want to discuss other things in recording. I have a lot going on. Not a good excuse. And I just want to share with you, first when I started with Pi, an interesting thing that's attributed to the Vilna Gaon, mathematical. It goes like this. One of the very earliest approximations of Pi is the Navi, Malachim Aleph, Perek Zion, that describes the Yam Shel Shlomo. Apparently it was a very large basin. Exactly what it was used for, I'm not sure, in the Beit HaMikdash. But the Navi gives its measurements. As first it says that it's round, circular. It measures 10 amot across from one end to one lip to the other. And 30 amot around the whole basin, and 5 amot deep, which is not relevant. What is relevant is giving the diameter, which is the 10 amot that go across, and the circumference, which is listed as 30 amot, which go around. If we were to make a ratio out of circumference to diameter, we get 3 with these numbers, which would be the biblical value of pi, since pi is the ratio of the circumference of a circle to its diameter. Now, if we were to take 3 and subtract it from 0.1415926, we'll use that approximation, we would have 0.1415926 divided by, I guess, 3.14. No, that's definitely wrong. I can't even concentrate on this. Just stick in "I'm sorry" any place that you want, because I am. If 3 is an approximation of pi, then it has a deviation from the real value of pi. We don't have a real value of pi. We have an ever-increasingly accurate approximation. It's a number that has been calculated to several trillions of decimal places. It's a fraction that never repeats itself, doesn't form patterns, and is a number beyond the regular scope of numbers. But if we wanted to see how far off 3 is from pi, yes, I think I was doing it correctly, we have 0.1415926, I'm rounding it there, divided by 0.1415926 divided by 3.1415926. We have a 4.5% discrepancy or deviation between the biblical approximation based on this pasuk and the known value of pi today. Now, for certain purposes, 4.5% is not a lot. For other purposes, it's a tremendous deviation, but that's not my point. My point is the following. The word for the circumference of the Yam Shel Shlomo in this pasuk is Vikav Shloshim Ba'ama Yasavoto Saviv, and a line 30 amot long will go around the whole thing. Okay? Now, the word Vikav is written Vav Kuf Vav He. There's an extra He in the word. It's not pronounced. The word is pronounced as if it were written Vav Kuf Vav. And I have to check in a minute if I'm right for using the Vavs. I think maybe not. So we're going to drop them. The word is Kav, which is a line. In this case, the circumference. Kav is written Kuf Vav He, and pronounced Kuf Vav. Attributed to the Vilna Gaon is the following calculation. If you take, all right, last try. I got rid of a bunch of stuff that didn't work. This is attributed to the Vilna Gaon. What he does is create an adjustment figure made up of the Ketiv and the Kri, the written form and the oral form of the word Kav. Kav, the way it's written in this context, Kuf Vav He, totals 111. He divides that by 106, which is the word Kav, without the He, producing a number, 1.04716981, whatever, which if you now multiply by 3, you get 3.1415. Up to that point, it's the same approximation as pi, continues 0.943 and more. You don't get exactly today's value of pi, but if we take this number and we subtract it from the approximation of pi, 3.1415926, we get a number that if we now divide by that same 3.1415926, we get a figure that deviates from the value of pi not by 4.5%, but by 26 parts in a million. 26 parts in a million is an extremely accurate value for pi. So what the Vilna Gaon did was turn the very rough rule of thumb, 30 divided by 10 equals 3, with a 4.5% deviation, into a number based on the Kri and the Ketiv, the way it's written and the way it's pronounced, of the word Kav in the Pasuk in question, to produce an adjusted value of pi that is correct to the tune of 26 parts per million. To me, that's an amazing thing, and happy Pi Day. And now, I hope to do this without faltering, because it is my message for Parshat Zachor. Without all of the introduction I was going to give and all of the embellishments, it's not going to work that way. It will just be as you will hear. The Torah says, Zachor et asher asa lecha Amalek baderech betzeitchem mimitzrayim. Remember what Amalek did to you, to the people of Israel, on our way out of Egypt. What did they do? The next pasuk tells that they attacked the weak stragglers of the large population in a way of attempting to vanquish us. I can't really do this part justice because we would have to get into the fact that Amalek was not territorially threatened. It just went against Israel because it was against Israel. It was a holdover from the perennial battle of Esav and Yaakov. Esav was the grandfather of Amalek. And it's as if he said to Amalek on his deathbed, I tried to kill Yaakov and I wasn't successful. I leave it to you to do the job. And then he died. I'm just describing it that way. That's not necessarily the way it happened. So that's what Amalek is, and we need to remember that for many reasons. And again, without doing this justice, put that in the back of your mind. Because the Sefer Charedim, a book written by a Kabbalist in the end of the 1500s, a contemporary of the Arizal, a contemporary of the composer of Lechadodi, and the author of the beautiful love poem between God and the people of Israel, the people of Israel for God, Yadid Nefesh. And to him is also attributed the song in different, slightly different words of Bilavavi Mishkan Evna, which I could use to explain something else, which I'm not getting into. He wrote in Sefer Charedim that in addition to remembering what Amalek did, and let me qualify that by saying we're talking about what Amalek did the first time, and what Amalek did the second, third, fourth, and every single time since then. We can take a look at the Purim story and see what happened that Haman hatched his plot. Haman was slighted by one individual in the courtyard of the king. His name was Mordechai. Mordechai did not bow to Haman. The commentaries give different reasons why not. And the bottom line was the members of the king's court who noticed that Mordechai was not bowing to Haman challenged him every day as if to say to them, to him, why should you be the exception to the rule? We're really not thrilled with bowing to Haman either, but we have to because the king has ordered it as such. And why are you doing it? And he would explain to them each day. And then the Megillah tells us that they, the people in the courtyard, went to Haman and said, told him about this Jew who is not bowing. And the point is made very clear in the Megillah that they sort of rubbed it in Haman's face by saying the reason that he was not bowing was not personal, but it was based on his Jewishness. Therefore, the Megillah says, Haman despised the idea of getting rid of Mordechai alone. This would have been a perfect off-with-his-head kind of situation, and nobody would have mourned Mordechai's demise. He would have deserved it, so to speak. But because they told him Mordechai was a Jew, he instead wanted to destroy every man, woman, and child, the nation of Mordechai. Now, this is still within the context of the first level of what we're supposed to remember. We're supposed to remember what happened. And when you learn and read about the Holocaust, we need to know what happened. That's exactly a fulfillment of Zachor et asher asah lecha Amalek in the late 1930s and early 1940s in our world. And any period when you want to talk about the Inquisition or you want to talk about massacres, you need to know and remember Zachor et asher asah lecha Amalek, or the Amalek types, what they did to you at X, Y, or Z in history. Sefer Charedim says there's something else to ponder, and it's qualitatively very different. We need to ponder, in addition to what Amalek did to us, what we did to make ourselves vulnerable to Amalek's attack. How do we do that? Take a look in Parshat B'Shalach. At the very end of B'Shalach, the last nine psukim, which constitute the Torah reading of Purim morning, Vayavo Amalek vayilachem im Yisrael b'irfidim. Amalek came and fought against Israel in the place called Refidim, which Chazal give a little drash on the word and speak to the weakening of our commitment. But look at the context. From the high point in Parshat Peshalach, which was Kriyat Yamsuf, the splitting of the sea, the miraculous crossing of the sea, the continued miracles of the drowning of the Egyptians, and when the Torah tells us that we saw the dead bodies of the Egyptians on the beach, Vayaminu Bashem uva Moshe Avdo, it led us to a full belief in God. Continue reading. 3 days later, we were complaining bitterly, pun intended, about undrinkable water. And our kind of complaining often came along with, why'd you take us out of Egypt to kill us here in the Midbar? What, not enough graves in Egypt for us? That kind of challenge, no matter how hungry you are or how thirsty you are, shows a lack of proper respect, honor, reverence, fear of God. So after the episode of that first water, and then the whole business with the Mun, and then another water episode, where this time Moshe was told by God to strike the rock with his staff, and he did, and water came out. So the good part is that we miraculously got water to sustain us. But the negative part of it was that we showed a lack of faith, which resulted in our being vulnerable to an attack from Amalek. Now, this is a very different area of remembering. Remembering what Amalek did is one thing. It stirs up our juices of memory to avenge / revenge / fulfillment of God's command to wipe them off the face of the earth / to be warned against the Amalek types throughout the generations. But this kind of pondering makes us look inside ourselves as part of Klal Yisrael and as individual Jews. And if we are pondering, which means we are remembering our lack of faith or lack of mitzvot or lack of Torah learning, then it should lead to a kind of direction that remembering the story of Amalek is not going to do, because it looks towards our self-improvement. Let's continue. Go to the other Amalek portion, which we read this Shabbos as Parshat Zachor. What happens immediately before that? You have the mitzvot of possessing honest weights and measures. We can make it bigadol, just in broad terms. A society that is built upon true justice and proper business practices of one person to the next will survive, will do more than survive. They will flourish. But cheat in business and create, God forbid, a public desecration of his name. This is what weakens the people of Israel to become vulnerable to the Hamons of the world, to the Amaleks of the world, to the Agags of the world, to the Hitlers of the world. And this continues in any area. Ponder, now here it gets a little sticky. We do not know for sure why things happen. we can't really answer the question, what merit were we lacking, slash, what merit was I lacking that I became vulnerable to an Amalek-like attack? Well, 17 years ago, coming up on it, in another 2 months, I was injured, as I've spoken about in the past, in a pigua, a suicide bombing. I was at the Shuk Machane Yehuda, late on a Friday afternoon, checking over my list, my shopping list, before I got onto a bus and left. And I stopped in between Chaba Bakery, which at that time was on Rehov Yafo, and a bus stop on Rehov Yafo. There were people getting on the bus. There was a line of people waiting to get on the bus, including an Arab woman who seemed to be pregnant, but wasn't. She was wearing a suicide vest that made her look pregnant and therefore not raise an alarm. And when she blew herself up, she killed 6 people, injured 35 others, including myself. And I am speaking these words 17 years later only because she was a woman. Had she been a man, he would have been wearing a full 360-degree wraparound suicide vest, and I, who was probably not more than 10 feet behind him, would have been killed. I have no doubt about that. The question where I have tremendous doubt, because my daughters raised it with me, is what made me vulnerable to being in a pigua, to surviving a pigua with relatively minor injuries, and, or is it the opposite? What merit did I have that I didn't get worse? So I don't know the answer to that, but that's not relevant here. What is relevant, and I feel that this is the direction that the Sefer HaCharedim is going in, that when I pause to reflect every year on what lackings there are in my personal Jewish interpersonal relationships and many, many other areas of human endeavor, what I was lacking needs improvement. And if I'm wrong and a flaw in my character or performance had nothing to do with the pigua, but I chose to ponder it and improve it, not the worst thing in the world. And this goes, et cetera, in many directions for many kind of people. So that aspect of pondering and remembering not just the historical notes on the various anti-Semitic Amalek, like Amalek, similar to Amalek, in the general ballpark of Amalek kind of attacks on the Jewish people. Yes, the numbers are different. Yes, the time it takes to finish and get it out of your system varies. And I shouldn't have said that because it'll never be out of my system. But it didn't stop me from going back to the scene of the pigua, which I did on the following Sunday, and which I found a very interesting experience. That's for some other time. But I went purposely into the personal side because that's how people react, and that's how people will benefit from this kind of pondering. I'm not getting into now why the Torah says you have to remember it. You take it as a given. Can't forget, you have to remember, you have to blot out Amalek. But we have a much broader experience in Jewish history, and we have to know not only what our enemies did to us or attempted to do to us, but why we were vulnerable in the first place, and what were we lacking that we can now improve on. If that's my message for Parshat Zohar, then that's it. I don't really need to say more, except Shabbat Shalom, enjoy the music coming up, and Lahish Tameah.
Zecher Amolek,
Amolek,
mitachas ha-shomoyim, mitachas.